Okay, friends, now we continue, and this will be number 53, and I'll bring this over to the side, and hopefully this will work, and here we go. Yes, so many little contraptions to get ready. Well, we've been talking about the hierarchy and its connection with the war. The Great War, the last phase of the Great War from 1914 to 1945. We've been talking about the idea that the Christ's work has been handicapped by the commercially minded of all nations who sought to profit from it. Even as now, there are people profiting from the coronavirus pandemic. And the United States, again, was the focus, but other neutral nations have profited. So the Christ has been hindered by those individuals who seek to exploit the plight of suffering humanity to their own financial advantage. And now we go on. Therefore, when the war broke out and humanity chose to fight, and the forces of evil were let loose upon our planet, the hierarchy ceased its efforts to bring peace through goodwill and openly sided with those fighting to drive evil back whence it came and to defeat the Axis nations. We read, you know, in the middle of the 30s, 1930s, all of the efforts toward goodwill which the hierarchy attempted. And one was to refuse to criticize even those who now appear well to have deserved the criticism. They tried the methods of goodwill. But when they saw there was no hope to avoid the precipitation of the war upon the physical plane, well, they simply chose sides. And probably some sweet sentimentalists rebuked them for having done that. And the idealistic pacifists would rebuke them. It's so strange, however, that even Gandhi was rebuked by the hierarchy for not choosing sides while fascism, Nazism was growing in India. Because of this decision on their part, hierarchy's part, I think, you know, let me get one of these brackets in case I have to write something. Because of their decision, this decision on their part, unthinking people claim that the statements of those who represent the hierarchy on Earth have been contradictory and that the actions of the hierarchy have not been compatible with their preconceived ideas of how love should be demonstrated. Well, those are the sentimentalists of which I was speaking, and they apparently love the form more than they love the principles, the spiritual principles, and the real development in an evolutionary sense of humanity. So, 1945, this is written. For the past 5 years, therefore, the efforts of the Christ and of his followers, the masters of the wisdom, notice the relationship because they are followers, have been directed towards clarifying true issues in the minds of men, therefore indicating the lines along which right action should be taken, and towards unifying inter-allied policies. Well, obviously, a clarification was needed, and even today, we have the same sentimentalism which deals with superficialities and the welfare of the form above the welfare of the spirit, the spiritual principles. They have been occupied with banding together, this is hierarchy, the men of goodwill throughout the world in preparation for the cycle of conferences and the coming world readjustments. They have sought to protect the sufferers, organizing methods of relief, guiding the minds of army leaders, and arousing public opinion to take those steps which will eventually lead to right human relations. This is what hierarchy has done in the face of this obstructive pacifism. Peace is, of course, the highly desirable state, but it has to be the right kind of peace, achieved in the right way, and not simply a compromise, the compromising of that which is higher for the sake of that which is lower. Temporarily, the German people and the Japanese have been left to their fate and to the tender mercies of the armies of evil. Thus they chose. The present debacle in Germany is a testimony as to what evil can bring upon those who follow it. With all these modes of strengthening the forces of light and of extricating humanity from the descended evil, the hierarchy has also been occupied with lines of activity which may not be disclosed because they concern the handling of the subjective forces of evil. Well, cosmic evil is resisted in Shambhala, and hierarchy knows some of the methods, but you can only imagine if such methods came into the possession of those who know so little about it, namely the average disciple, even the average initiate. So, the people of Germany and Japan learned what it was like to follow a Hitler, to follow a Tojo, and they were destroyed, bombed out, incinerated, and many, reasonably innocent people died in the conflagration. Think of the firebombing of Tokyo, 100,000 dead. Think of Dresden in Germany and the firestorms that there occurred. That was the aftermath of having chosen idealistically, somewhat insanely, to follow someone of the caliber of Hitler. The potency of these forces will be realized if the length of time which the war has lasted is considered, and also the fact that two nations have been able to withstand until the past few months an entire world of nations united against them. Well, things were pretty well disintegrating for Japan and Germany by the time this was written. The unconditional surrender of Germany, I think it was May 8th, 1945, and of Japan later in August, I believe, or September at the latest, but I think August. So the forces of evil were potent indeed. That's what he's trying to say. Very potent. So many countries ranged against them. They still held out. Of course, they were being protected, these countries, by those very forces, who at length simply had to give up, realizing that there could be no victory in the project of defeating humanity. This is a phenomenal fact in itself, and a witness to the strength of the evil group, objective and subjective, which has sought to gain dominance over mankind. It still seeks to do so. Largely this time, I think, by economic means. Had the hierarchy not taken sides with the United Nations and thrown the power of its thought into battle, victory, written in 1945, might still be a long way off. Today, it is well nigh in our hands. And the hour, of course, means the hands of the forces of light working through the United Nations, the Allies, and the hands of hierarchy. DK is showing how he identifies here with the forces of light working out on the dense physical plane in consummating battles. Some of us were born before these battles concluded, and some of us may have been involved in the earlier phases of the Great War, and are therefore attached to the need to understand what really happened, even as I am attempting here and encouraging you to do so. As I said elsewhere, says the Tibetan, it is a fallacy to believe, as some do, that the main trend of Christ's work is through the medium of the churches and the world religions. He's much broader than that. Much broader than that. He necessarily works through them when conditions permit. And there is a living nucleus of true spirituality within them, or when their evocative appeal is potent enough to reach him. So you can see that our invocative power is just essential in calling forth the evocative response of the higher sources of spiritual energy. He uses all possible channels whereby the consciousness of man may be enlarged and right orientation may be brought about. All the seven ashrams are under his supervision, and all of them cover the various activities essential to human living. All of them together cover those essential activities. It is, however, truer to say that it is as world teacher that he consistently works, and that the churches are but one of the teaching avenues he employs. Somehow this broadening is so necessary, it has taken hold in the minds of people that only religion is spiritual. And at one point, DK tells us that is that kind of attitude is a great victory for the Black Lodge. All that enlightens the minds of men, all propaganda that tends to bring about right human relations, all modes of acquiring real knowledge, all methods of transmuting knowledge into wisdom and understanding, all that expands the consciousness of humanity and of all subhuman states of awareness and sensitivity, all that dispels glamour and illusion and that disrupts crystallization and disturbs all static conditions, come under the realistic activities of the department within the hierarchy which he supervises. It's pretty much the great 246 line, but his extension touches all the ashrams to a degree. He is, after all, the head of the spiritual hierarchy, and being that, it seems correct to say that he is also the heart. He is limited by the quality and caliber of the invocative appeal of humanity. So if we, as members of the new group of world servers, could increase the quality, the strength of that appeal, then a limitation which obstructs his strongly intended plan for service would be eliminated. So the quality and caliber of invocative appeal limits him. That in its turn is conditioned by the point in evolution which humanity has attained. So again comes education, and especially in these subtle matters, this would greatly help the Christ give what he has to give, provide humanity and the lower kingdoms and the planet as a whole, really, with what is needed if we did not get in the way. So let us broaden our point of view and realize that whether it's politics or finance or science or economics all of them are necessary. And the Christ influences them as head of the hierarchy, even though the Manu and the Mahachohan are more intimately involved, shall we say, in the working out of those ashrams which come under their supervision. Now let's go on. 479, we're on 479. In the Middle Ages of history and earlier, it was the churches and the schools of philosophy which provided the major avenues for his activity. But this is not so today. So it's so important for people in the strictly spiritual field not to become proud in the thought that they are the major conduit for the Christ's work. They share that conduction with other ashrams whose work is just as necessary and in many cases less deleterious than work through the churches. So this is a point which the churches and organized religion would do well to remember. There is now a shift of his emphasis and attention into two new fields of endeavor. First, into the field of worldwide education, and secondly, into the sphere of implementing intelligently those activities which come under the Department of Government in its three aspects of statesmanship, politics, and legislature. That's interesting, isn't it? You can pretty well maybe look at the first ray, second ray, and third ray divisions there. And the Christ is filled with will, supplemented, encouraged by the avatar of synthesis, filled with the spirit of peace, as you might expect, and filled with the practical third ray knowledge, which is so necessary to get the divine plan to manifest tangibly on the physical plane. So here we are seeing what the Christ's work really is and how broad it is and how narrow are the minds which think that only through their exclusive sect does God work, does the Christ work. The common people are today awakening to the importance and responsibility of government. It is therefore realized by the hierarchy that before the cycle of true democracy, as it essentially exists and will eventually demonstrate, I suspect, during the Aquarian Age, before that cycle of true democracy related to brotherhood, really, the second and third decanate of Aquarius, can come into being, the education of the masses in cooperative statesmanship, in economic stabilization through right sharing, and in clean political interplay is imperatively necessary. Notice, again, the three factors which must be on their way if the Christ is to return when and as intended. Namely, that there must be a sharing. There must come a house cleaning. I'm forgetting the other one, but it's there. I've repeated it 1,000 times. Peace. And all of this will lead to peace. Right sharing, house cleaning, especially in the political areas and in the church, will lead to the requisite measure of peace, which must exist if the Christ is to return when and as expected. And of course, the when is up to him. I don't think it's a particular date. I think it's a condition within humanity, regardless of when that date occurs. The long divorce between religion and politics must be ended. But in the right way, I would say, what we don't need is the amalgamation of church and state. Spirituality and politics must go together, I would say. But these are not two separate fields. As the philosopher King of Plato's conception knew, there has to be knowledge of the spiritual nature of humanity if humanity is to be properly led, properly guided. There's that story about how a particular tyrant invited Plato to his country to express and engineer the appearance of a philosopher king. Well, maybe Plato didn't realize it or suspected it, but the tyrant had himself in mind. And when it did not prove wise or efficacious, and when Plato resisted, the tyrant sold him into slavery. And as he was traveling on a boat, which was to bring about his enslavement, pirates captured them and took a liking to Plato, and he was redelivered to his own country. It's hard to be a philosopher king or queen. It's hard to be. And people think that simply because they are in power, they have the ability. But sacrifice, selflessness are required. The long divorce then between religion, or I would say spirituality, and politics must be ended. And this can come now about because of the high level of human mass intelligence and the fact that science has made all men so close. I suppose our communication system, that what happens in some remote area of Earth's surface is a matter of general interest within a few minutes. Time and space are now negated. This is what you might expect from the apotheosis of the third ray, leading in one respect to omnipresence. You are there. If it's happening in Hong Kong, it's happening here. If it's happening in Antarctica or the Arctic, it's happening here. The here and now takes the place of the there and then. So, okay, we've been talking about a certain bridge from the forces of enlightenment to the forces of reconstruction. There can be no reconstruction without a restoration of the divine plan and an enlightening of humanity's consciousness, because after all, humanity makes the decisions which will determine its fate. And according to the Syrian law of freedom, the will of humanity must be left unobstructed, except, I suppose, in those great acts of God, such as the volcanic destruction of Lemuria and the destructions by flood of so many of the Atlantean countries. Interesting that the United States was called by the Tibetan the center of the old Atlantean continent, and it seemed that it was not that part of Atlantis that sank. So we don't so much have to talk about how it was that the Native Americans made their way to the United States. They were there as examples of the Atlantean race. Well, that's the way history and geology will be amended when more is factually known, and people will be amazed at how wrongly they have interpreted the movement, the migrations of various peoples, and how blithely they have discounted as fantasy the existence of Atlantis or of Lemuria. All of this will come. Says the Tibetan, I have referred to the coming full moon of June as Christ's unique occasion. So we're to reread the reappearance of the Christ, chapter 2. So basically, DK seems to be dealing in these instructions with March, April, May, June of the year 1945, a climactic year when it comes to the fate of humanity and the decision of the Christ to move outward in physical appearance, such that every eye shall see him. Of course, I don't think every consciousness will understand what they are seeing, but every eye shall see him. And as DK said, not exactly an appealing prospect to the great Lord. So Christ's unique occasion, the coming full moon of June, 1945, just what is entailed in that statement, I am not empowered to say. Empowered is an interesting word. Either permission is lacking or ability. But I can cast some light upon one phase of it, that it is Christ's unique occasion, one phase. It has long been a legend, and who shall say it is not a fact? Master Moria tells us that every legend is truth, is factual. That's a very interesting thought. Okay, and who shall say it is not a fact? It has long been a legend that at each full moon of June, Christ repeats and preaches again to the assembled world, to the hearts and minds of men, the last sermon of the Buddha. Well, we act as if this is the case, thus linking the full enlightenment of the pre-Christian era under the third ray and in relation to the cosmic mind and the wisdom of the Buddha to the cycle of the distribution of the energy of love for which Christ is responsible. It does raise our thought when we think that of the WASAC message of 1946, which we will get to as we're going through this book, stating that only for a few more decades will the Buddha return to the WASAC Valley. Of course, the timing is up to him. But in all probability, only for a few more decades from the year 1946. So by the time 1981 comes along, which it did, and about which Mary Bailey made some significant movements, gestures, teaching, we have now to wonder in what way the Buddha is helping humanity. Because surely he is helping. Such is his love and even attachment to humanity. This year, the message of the past and of the present will be augmented. The enlightenment of the past, the wisdom of the Buddha at present. So let's call it light and wisdom, will be augmented, enhanced, and supplemented by the enunciating of the new note, word or theme, which will distinguish the new age and characterize the coming civilization and culture. It will climax all the past and lay the seeds for the future. Now, when I read this, I think of universality, maybe. That is the goal of the Aquarian Age, and that particular sign is characterized by the consciousness of universality. It will climax all the past and lay the seeds of the future. A new note, augmented, enhanced, and supplemented by a new note, which will characterize the coming culture. The significance of this statement lies in the fact that telepathically and with the entire force of the hierarchy behind him, plus the potency of those to whom is committed the expression of the will of God, you know, custodians of the will, as they have been called in hierarchy, later to be implemented by the hierarchy under the direction of the Christ, the world teacher will, in his own right, make certain statements and use certain word formulas which will create the nucleus of the thought form and present the blueprint, you know, the archetype, around which and upon which the new age will be developed. So again, the Christ involved in deeply esoteric matters of which we know nothing, but the whole tenor, the whole quality of the Aquarian Age will depend for its success on some of the things which he is said to do or to have done, given that we are in the year 2020 now. So telepathically, hierarchy behind him, Shambhala behind him, the world teacher in his own right, and perhaps not depending for accomplishment upon the avatar of synthesis, the spirit of peace, the Buddha, but in his own right will make certain statements and use certain word formulas which will create the nucleus of the thought form and present the blueprint around which and upon which the New Age will be developed. I guess we have not to doubt the importance of the word. Obviously, these are deeply esoteric words, mantras, and so forth. And we are not entitled to know them, we don't know them, but we know that the Christ and the Buddha are doing everything that they lawfully may to make entry into the Aquarian Age a success for humanity. Aquarius circulates and spreads every type of energy or force, and, you know, including epidemics. And we hope now that the force and energy spread will be beneficently related to the manifesting of the divine plan. For this moment, the thinking and planning of the enlightened aspirants of the world have made, consciously but mostly unconsciously, long preparation. Christ enunciating the outlines of the new age. And preparation has been made by the aspirants and disciples, even as it states here, even though in many cases unconsciously so. They have, through their efforts, these disciples, these enlightened aspirants, which includes disciples, they have, through their efforts, provided the mass of thought substance which the coming pronouncement will affect. Christ will bring into proper form for the creative activity of the new group of world servers working in every nation and in every religious, social, economic, and political group. So when we think, well, what has the Christ done while we're out here fighting the war? Where was hierarchy? And hierarchy was making preparations of a type which we cannot conceive and which lies entirely beyond our scope of understanding and execution. So this is the pronouncement which is coming from the great Lord. And we, humanity, have provided the thought substance by which that pronouncement can use, through which it can take shape. Okay. Christ's pronouncement will be embodied in certain stanzas, of which those already given are a small part. What has been given? Let the forces of light bring illumination to mankind. That's one. And the great word of power following it, and the second, more assertive mantram using the first ray. Let the lords of liberation issue forth, and let them bring succor to the sons of men, etc. These days, although we are not in a external shooting war, there is reason to believe that this second of the great invocations can be used with profit. And if those two are only a small part of these stanzas, then what are these stanzas? Only he can use these words of power in the proper manner, connotation, and emphasis. Not even the masters, not even the Chohans under his supervision, but only he, as the savior, the teacher, the great psychologist, only he is in position really to use these words of power. Only an inadequate paraphrase of certain sentences found in that pronouncement can be given to humanity. And this paraphrase can be used only when the war is over and not before, for whatever occult reason. Humanity will have had to prove itself worthy by completely defeating the Axis powers and demanding unconditional surrender, which it did. This means, says the Tibetan, that they can be employed only when both Germany and Japan are under complete control of the United Nations, under the complete control of the United Nations, through whom the hierarchy has been working. This will not imply the attainment of complete peace, but it will mean the end of all aggressive fighting and all organized resistance, leading to a period of relative tranquility. You know, we're told that after the Armageddon comes this era of peace. How is it put that Satan, which we know to be the personality on its own and without spiritual influence, that Satan will be bound for 1,000 years. All of this is symbolic, and we know that other struggles lie ahead. Standing in his own place at a central point in Asia, maybe, you know, Shigatse, his garden, his precincts, where masters are taught what they need to know. Standing in his own place at a central point in Asia, remote from the throngs and the impact of humanity, Christ will bless the world at the exact moment of the full moon of June, from which the forces of reconstruction stem. We hear of his pine tree, of his blessing of the world, with the great invocation, every evening beneath his pine. You know, these must be among the most sacred precincts, and I assume would be very well guarded. So, at this full moon of June, he, the Christ, will then repeat the Buddha's last words or sermon, as well as the Beatitudes which he uttered when on earth and which have been so inadequately and misleadingly translated. Translation based upon the memory of what he said, but not upon direct dictation. To these two messages, the Christ will add a new one imbued with power for the future. That part of what he says in which it is possible for men to participate will be used for years to come in the place of the two stanzas of the great invocation, which have been used for 9 years. I suppose coming out in 1936 or something like that. And the more assertive stanza used since 1940, when the war really broke out. Well, 1939, 1940. So we naturally assume that every festival of the Christ, every festival of humanity, every festival of goodwill, they're all the same. They mean the same, will be accompanied by the Christ enunciating the last sermon of the Buddha and the Beatitudes. I think what I'll do is, it wasn't based on direct dictation, and like so much in the Bible, is paraphrased according to the memory of those present. It's better than nothing. But so much of what the Christ said has been complicated and even forged, criminally forged, by church officials who found it more convenient not to follow the simple teaching of the Christ, but wanted to make of it a rigid theology. So, two words of power and a new one. Which I think we call our great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth, etc. And these three are only a small part of the stanzas and verses to which he has access and which he will or did pronounce. We have been helped in so many lawful ways, maybe not the ways that we would conceive, you know, that Jesus will come to save only Israel and defeat its enemies, and its enemies would be defeated in normal warfare. Well, something entirely different was in the mind of Jesus and of the Christ and of still higher potencies. Something that had to do with the coming of the fifth kingdom of nature, the kingdom of God, and could not be conceived in terms of temporal kingdoms, the way the followers would almost naturally conceive. Page 482. Behind the Christ, focusing with intensity today and preparing for a great act of spiritual cooperation at the time of the June full moon, stands the hierarchy. An act of cooperation. If the Black Lodge seems to cooperate, it's only to gain advantage over each other. Together with him, they will invoke a group of spiritual forces, which, for lack of a better name, we will call the forces of reconstruction. So here is the third move, the third method by which hierarchy hopes to salvage humanity, which is in very great need of salvaging at this time. We've done so many things incorrectly. Now we seem to be making up for lost time. And there is a possibility that we will break free of our old conditioning. But it will be up to every one of us in his own, in her own practical way to see that one's service is characterized by the highest spiritual principles one can conceive of as related to our present state of unfoldment. We can't do what the Christ does. We can't do what a Chohan does or even a master. We have our place and our grade. But within that place and grade, there are things we can do which will definitely help the manifestation of the divine plan on earth. So says the Tibetan, I would ask you to have clearly in your minds the three groups of spiritual energies which, at the time of the three full moons of April, May, and June, so definitely tropical, will be released into activity and which will aid humanity in its major task of rebuilding a new and better world. Well, restoration, enlightenment, and reconstruction. So I'll just put it down, you know. All I have to do is find the place. So, restoration, enlightenment, and reconstruction. The forces of restoration, these will work to restore morale and psychological health, thus implementing the resurrection of humanity, you know, it's Aries, resurrection, from the death cycle through which it has been passing as portions of humanity, well, maybe all of humanity, paid a very heavy karmic debt. The restoration of men's mental condition to a wholesome and happier approach to life is the primary objective. These forces will bring about the emergence of a new civilization, which is definitely man's creative work. So this is important, you know. Oftentimes it simply tells us we're dealing with the restoration of the divine plan, but here there is a greater description. Morale, psychological health, rising out of the death cycle, all these things our mental condition resurrected into wholesomeness and a happier approach, and the bringing about of a new civilization in which the plan, divine plan, restored may be the principal conditioning factor. Now, when it comes to the forces of enlightenment, let's deal with that. Coming under Taurus, the forces of enlightenment, these, when let loose upon earth, will produce a clear grasp of the plan, which the hierarchy desires to see worked out, a revelation of the issues involved in their right and possible sequence, and they will also give a sense of proportion to human thinking, plus an appreciation of the spiritual values which should determine the objective policies. These forces will salvage the cultural gains of the past which is dead and gone, and of which little should again be restored, and will implement upon the few foundational cultures of the past that new and better culture which will be distinctive of the Aquarian age. So, education and the salvaging of that which is of value from the past. A whole new perspective in consciousness, a kind of enlightenment will come to many. The energy will be there from Aries, and it will be rightly guided into the light by these forces of enlightenment. And I think I'll just take the forces of reconstruction. Which is the Gemini part of this threefold sequence. The forces of reconstruction, these will usher in an era of pronounced creative activity and will bring about the rebuilding of the tangible world upon new lines. Well, the will to create is there, sometimes associated with Aries, but certainly Gemini has the mental fertility and the handiness to do this. This, the total destruction of the old forms will necessitate. There was a great wiping out that occurred in the war, and many of the emissaries of destruction were born with Pluto in Pisces, Neptune in Pisces. You can understand what that would mean. I think so, anyway. Certainly Pluto and Pisces. So new creativity is necessitated when the old forms are annihilated. It is this great group of forces which will be set in motion by the Christ at the June full moon. The new creations. Creating the divine plan within the dense physical body of the planetary and solar logos, instead of supinely giving way to the bad conditioning of the past. The focus of their work, these forces, you know, we can only imagine who and what are involved here. The focus of their work will definitely be upon the physical plane, Aries, mental, Taurus, astral, with some mentality, of course, and Gemini, etheric, physical, etheric anyway, and physical, yes. Their task is to precipitate and bring into manifestation that which the work of the forces of restoration and of enlightenment have made subjectively possible. Okay, friends, we are on page 483, and I'll try to capture as I do from 478 to 483. Okay. Having concluded program 53, a little more than an hour. Now, all of this we have built upon. This has been accomplished, and the implications have been accepted or rejected. Well, nothing perfect, you know. It seems that humanity will never do anything perfectly, even though on the fourth subplane of the atmic plane, the quality of perfection can be found. So 478 to 483. And we'll begin with number 50, and this is the 22nd of May. We'll begin with number 54 program. It'll be 1 hour probably and XX minutes. And the date will be XX, we just don't know. If I had the stamina I used to have, I could produce more. But things are as they are. So all of this will appear on Makara and eventually on YouTube. We do want to get the Tibetan's books as much out there as possible. Some people might say, well, just read the books, and they're right. Certainly, they are correct. But every once in a while, it helps to have a bridge towards certain associations which are capable of producing more light. And we might call it the book within the book, or the books within the book. Because what is written has piled upon it many other books. And maybe some hint can be gathered by the attempt to relate what is said to other factors which have been given out by the Tibetan. So, lots of love, many blessings to you. I'll stop the recording and we'll end this particular program, number 53. See you then, as soon as possible, believe me.